the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, we do welcome you to the program. It is all about Bucket Strategy Investing. This is the one show that gives you the strategies you need to help you get to, and I would say help you get through retirement. How's that? We're here every day to help you out. I'm Johnny Dean. I'm here with Professor Rick Plum. Now, this hour, we're going to be talking about one of the big questions that faces those who are at retirement or nearing retirement, even those who are like 15 years away or more from retirement. At what age should you be taking your Social Security? Now, normal retirement benefits are available to retirees as early as age 62, but as you may or may not be aware, those benefits do grow with age, all the way up until you hit age 70, when the benefits stop growing. So, what factors should you consider when you're trying to decide if it's age 62 or age 70 or full retirement age, anywhere in between? When is the right time for you to start collecting? Each individual has their own answer. So we're going to talk a little bit in generic terms about it, but some things that you should think about when you're trying to decide when to take your Social Security. Now, you got a question for the Brain Trust? Does not have to be on that. Can be on any topic at all that's giving you trouble. Anything you'd like to know about, you give us a call right now at our studio number. Lines are open, 877-PLANNER. The hour is just getting started, so we do have all the lines open for you right now. 877-752-6637. Emails, yes, we're going to get to those just as quickly as we can. I'm not sure.
You say that every day.
I know. But I mean it. I'm sincere when I say it at the top, but we take calls first. So we will get to those. You can get them to us here at wealthed.com. We do answer all of them. So wealthed.com near the top of the page. Again, any topic that you want, you can talk to us about. The Professor Rick Plum, he's our main Brain Trust advisor here with me, courtesy of the, and I mean this, the wonderful people at Lucia Capital Group who bring you this hour of the program. If you need a bucket strategy put together specifically for you, one that can fit your goals, you can call the professor or any of the Brain Trust advisors at Lucia Capital Group at this number, 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number. Preparing yourself for whatever might happen, that's one of the keys to a successful retirement plan. So you need to make sure you have a plan for whatever might happen down the line. And anything could happen. Again, the number off the air at Lucia Capital Group is 800-644-1150. Our number on the air, 877-PLANNER. You know it. You love it. You write it down. You call it. You ask us your money questions. 877-752-6637. So a lot of interest in this topic, Professor Rick Plum, which is why we try not to focus a ton on it, because we do get a lot of calls anyway on Social Security and emails on the topic. But let's start with the basics here. If somebody's trying to decide when to take Social Security, there is a lower limit, and there really isn't an upper limit, but...
Upper limit of what?
When you can take Social Security. I mean, there's a minimum age.
Yeah, and there's a maximum age.
There isn't a maximum age. You're stupid if you wait past age 70, because your benefit isn't going to grow. But you're more
you're
than
not
welcome.
Allowed to take it before 62. So
that's what
you're getting at.
Yes,
okay.
You're more than welcome to wait past age 70, but you shouldn't.
No, you should not wait past age 70 to collect your own benefit, because it stops growing there, and you're not going to be able to recoup that money at any time if you go past 6 months. So
right.
Yeah. I mean, yes. Okay. So your choices are somewhere between for retirement benefits.
Yes.
Somewhere between 62 and 70. And there's a different game for people who are 62 already and who turned 62 before the end of last year, and for people who did not turn 62 by the end of last year. The kinder, benevolent government that we have has made our choices much simpler for those people that did not have the foresight to be born in 1953 or earlier. We don't have as many options if we were born in 1954 or later, so our choices are a lot easier because we don't have that many choices. Those people who were born before 1954 have more choices, and therefore it's much difficult for them to determine what they want. Isn't it nice that the government took those choices away from us? Not being sarcastic at all, sorry.
But, yeah, and all that money too, by the way.
But it is an issue, and so we do have to look at when the individuals were born in the situation to try to make a choice. There are more options for somebody who was born before 1954 because they can do things called the restricted application.
Yeah.
If you're born in 1954 or later, you cannot do a restricted application.
Yeah, so now we will cover some of that in just a little bit. But the key ages here for Social Security are 62 for normal retirement benefits. That's the earliest that you can start receiving, applying for and receiving mm-hmm. benefits. Full retirement age, which for people right now
is 66.
It's age 66. It'll go up to age 67 starting in the next couple of years, phasing in over the next several years. And then age 70, which is the point that
they stop growing.
The benefits stop growing.
And so if we're looking at a single individual that has no ability to take a benefit from anybody else, it's all a matter of time. Do you take it at 62? Do you take it at 70? Do you take it somewhere in between? And there is a break-even age. I mean, if you're going to go without money for a series of years, whether it's 4 years from 62 to 66 or 66 to 70 or even 8 years from 62 to 70, you need to be able to have some time horizon on the other side to be able to recoup with that higher benefit. You need to have some time to recoup that money you didn't receive in the early years. How much time? It's generally, and each person is slightly different, it's generally in the early to mid 80s, depending upon what variables we want to and assumptions we want to include in the calculation. There are cost of living adjustments that actually favor waiting. There are earnings that you can earn on the money that you're taking early, which favors taking it early. So there's things that go on within the calculations we need to build into it. But generally, you got to live to normal life expectancy to basically have a push.
And I think the reason Social Security Administration set it up with the cost of, I'm sorry, with the that you get by waiting, it's according to Social Security, supposed to make the decision easy. If you take it early, whether you take it earlier at age 70, if you hit that break-even age, it's not going to matter. As you said, it's a wash right there. And the decision isn't necessarily a make-or-break deal. We'll talk more about this. I want to take a couple of calls. 877-PLANNER is our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Some things to think about, though, that we'll discuss in a little bit, whether you're single, whether you're married, do you have a long life, that kind of a thing.
Do you need the money? Are you working?
Do you need the money? That's another one that's hardly ever discussed at all. All right, let's get back to the phone lines. Let's continue on. Greg is up at Lake Stevens, Washington. Hi, Greg.
Hello, how are you?
Great. How can we help you today?
Okay, here's my situation. I'm 71 and still working full-time. My wife just turned 61. She is also working full-time. Started collecting Social Security at my full retirement age of 66, probably unfortunately, but anyway, that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. And I know there's Social Security changes coming that Congress just passed through.
Yes.
I'm wondering, is there any spousal benefit of this? What are my options? My options are probably locked in, but what about my wife's options when she's turned 62? We plan on retiring maybe in 5 years from now when she's of full retirement age. What would be the best plan for us?
Well, let me first off, if she's going to continue to work and make more than, call it, $16,000 a year, she really doesn't have any option at 62 because she's subject to the retirement earnings test all the way up until she hits her full retirement age. So as long as she's working and making a reasonable wage, she's probably not going to have any Social Security available to her because of that retirement earnings test. So the question is, what happens when she quits working or gets to full retirement age, whichever happens first? She doesn't have a whole lot of options because she is not 62 yet. She did not turn 62 by the end of last year. How much is your benefit right now?
I'm about $2,000 a month.
And how much is her projected benefit?
Maybe a little bit more than that. It'll be when she turns 66, it'll probably be about $2,200.
Okay, then she's got an issue because reality is, we'd like to see her benefit grow until age 70. So if you can afford, because that, now, see, I should ask that question too.
Both in good health.
You expect her to live into her late 80s and beyond?
Probably.
She doesn't have that many options. She cannot do a restricted application when she gets to full retirement age. She lost that option when they changed the rules last year. So she's right. Going to have to either apply for a benefit or not apply for a benefit. Her benefit is larger projected than your benefit. And so it'd be nice if we have longevity on her side to postpone taking hers until age 70 so that her benefit goes from $2,200 to like $2,900 or $3,000 so that she has that for her survivor benefit or for the rest of her life versus just the $2,200 for the rest of her life. So if she's going to live a long time, it probably makes sense for her to delay taking her benefit. And that's where I would at least plan on doing. You can always change your mind and go the other way, but I would plan on letting her with wait, but it also means she can't take a spousal benefit because she's in the new category that says if you apply for benefit, you got to take them both.
Got it. That's what I thought. I thought that was the change.
Yep. And you're right. Yours is locked in.
That's it. Well, hey, Greg, look, if you haven't had the questions, hang on. I just have to take a break here. So hold on. We can talk to you more about this, either off the air or on the air. We will address, by the way, those changes that just came into being last November and will start affecting people here at the end of April. So let's see. We also got Randy in Coconut Creek, Florida. Question on file and suspend. We'll get to that question as well. We still have a couple of lines open. So if you've got a money question on Social Security or anything else, you give us a call. We're here to answer it for you. Brain Trust in the house. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, answering your money questions right here on the radio and television sets across America. Now, we'll also be doing it in person. A lot of folks have already signed up for the workshops that we have coming up. As I said, a great time was had by everyone, and I mean everyone, back last Saturday in Las Vegas, and there will be more this Saturday and the next Saturday. This Saturday, Brain Trust heading to the Pacific Northwest to visit the folks in Seattle, Washington. 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshop. Saturday, this Saturday, February 27th in Seattle. Join the Brain Trust. Sign up. You go to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. After that, March 12th, Phoenix, Arizona. And then the Saturday after that, March 19th, Portland, Oregon. So you got Seattle, Phoenix, and Portland, the next three. There will be more after that. If you want to check where the Brain Trust will be, get your money questions answered in person. You go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com. A lot of questions last time, too, Professor, on Social Security. So another one of the reasons why we're covering it today on the topic. So big thing among retirees and pre-retirees. Let's get back to the phones. Two lines open, 877-PLANNER. Ask your money question while you got the chance. Randy in Coconut Creek, Florida is next. Randy, thanks for hanging on. How can we help you today?
I'll tell you what my original plans were, then you can tell me if those have been changed by the changes in Social Security.
Okay.
I'm 64, and my wife is 6 months younger. She's 63. And our original plans were when I turned 66, I was going to file and suspend. And then 6 months later, when she turned 66, she was going to file and take a spousal benefit. And we were going to let both of our regular Social Security go till 70 before we actually took it.
Right.
Yeah.
How much is your benefit projected to be at 66?
$21.45 a month.
How much is your wife's benefit projected to be at 66?
$11.76.
Okay, well, unfortunately, the changes in the rules did affect you directly. You will not be able to do exactly what you wanted to do. The ability to file for your benefit and suspend it while still allowing somebody else to take a benefit from your work record will be gone. You would have to be full retirement age by April of this year and actually file and suspend by April 29th of this year to have that option still available. You cannot accelerate your age quick enough to make that happen. So one of the things you may consider doing is not having your wife's benefit grow until age 70. Have her take her benefit at when you turn 66. So basically she's 65 and a half at that point. She files and starts receiving her benefit, assuming she's not working. And then you are old enough to do the restricted application. But in this case, instead of her taking it from you where you've suspended your benefit, you can't do that anymore. You take a benefit from her, but she starts receiving her benefit. You still get the benefit of your larger benefit growing until age 70. So you do get the bigger benefit growing, and it will become the larger survivor benefit in the future. But you cannot have both of them grow until 70 unless you just don't take any money on either side until 70.
Okay, so at my age 66, start taking hers, or her age 66?
Well, I would do it, if you're going to do it at her age 65. Now, she's not working, or she is working?
No, she's not working.
I'd do it when you turn 66. She'll take a 3.3% cut in her pay, but you'll pick up 50% of her number. So you would get like $1,500-$1,600 a month combined between the two of you until 70, and then you pick up your benefit at age 70 that's going to be, you know, 32% higher than age 66. The only other way is to go without anything until you each hit 70.
Okay. There's nothing we need to do then before that April deadline. This will still be eligible.
There's nothing you can do before the April deadline.
Yeah, they won't let you. Your strategy that you mentioned, Randy, was perfect.
Until November.
Probably the best thing you could do until they sprang this on us back last November and said they weren't going to allow you to do it.
And to be able to do the restricted application that you're still looking to do, you've already done everything you need to do. You turned 62 or older by December 2015. That's the only thing that is required for the restricted application. And so you're all done. You're ready.
A lot clearer to me now. I kept reading that I was grandfathered in, but I didn't know what exactly I was grandfathered in for.
You're grandfathered in for the restricted application. Right. You were aced out of the file and suspend.
Okay.
That help?
That explains it for me. Thank you.
Randy, thank you for the call. And there are a lot of people in the same situation.
Right. And they have clarified a few things. It is, you need to be able to suspend the benefit voluntarily, which means your full retirement age. You need to voluntarily suspend it by April 29th, which, unless you're 66 in April, or by at least April of this year, you're not going to be able to voluntarily suspend it by April 29th.
Yeah.
So we've got a couple more months where we can talk about the idea of the file and suspend, somebody actually doing it. After April 29th of this year, if you haven't done it, you're not going to be allowed to do it, even if you were 66. If you're 66 now and you wait until May to actually suspend
your
benefit,
aced out.
You can still suspend it, but anybody who wants to pull a benefit from your work record won't be able to do it. You'll be under the new rules at that point. So you'd have to be able to suspend it before April 29th of this year to have those old rules still apply to you, which means you have to be full retirement age or older by April of this year.
I suppose the easiest way to say it is that if you do not file and suspend before April 29th of this year, then you will not be able to file and suspend and have somebody get a benefit from you. The only way you can file and suspend by April 29th is to already be full retirement age. So that part of it takes care of itself.
Pretty much. So after April, we'll only be talking about where you by the end of April or by the end of 2015. If so, you still have the restricted application available to you. If not, not.
Yeah, and why some of this is confusing is because what you had told Randy to do, our caller, applies to people who are 62 already and have been all year.
But there's so much out there in the publications and the scare mails that say, you need to do something by April or you're going to lose all this opportunity.
Yeah, they say you lose $60,000.
They don't tell you that it has nothing to do with you. It has all to do with your age. You either can or cannot do it, or have not already done it. And if you aren't 66 by April, by the end of April, you're not going to have this option no matter what you do.
Yeah, but again, it's important to note that, as you said, Professor Plum, if you are 66 now, and you plan on doing what it is you're going to do it.
Get her done.
Do it before April 29th. That is where the real deadline happens to hit. Because you can't say in August of this year, I've been over age 66.
I was old enough. I could have done it. I just didn't do it.
Haven't done it yet.
You got to get it done at the right time.
Is there any reason for somebody not to do it? I mean, if they're planning on waiting anyway, filing and suspending?
Only if they were going to do a restricted application from somebody else's work record. But if you're not planning on doing a restricted application from somebody else's work record, there's no reason not to do the file and suspend by April if you're eligible for it.
Yeah, because even if nothing happens, even if you wind up not doing a file and suspend or restricted application, I mean, you still have a couple of options open to you if you want to go back and retrieve back benefits.
Even if you're single, you may get married, and a year later your spouse can pull a benefit from you maybe, unless they're too young, obviously.
Right. So if you're age 66 right now and you haven't filed and suspended, and you're
planning on waiting until 70?
Exactly, yeah.
File and suspend.
Don't file and suspend if you need the benefits, because then your benefit is suspended. Wouldn't make any sense. Okay, we got some lines open. If you've got a money question of any kind, whether it's on Social Security or not, you can give us a call. Professor Plum from Lucia Capital Group is here answering those questions. It is Bucket Strategy Investing, Brain Trust on tap. Johnny Dean and Professor Plum, we're coming right back. Don't go away. That song sounds familiar to me. Why? Oh, because this is what we do every Tuesday afternoon, and that, in fact, includes today. It's the Social Security Show. That's our theme song with me, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We are talking about it here, and if you can't get enough of that, certainly you want to tune in to the Social Security Show every Tuesday. This afternoon, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern Time, where I'll be hosting with Professor Rick Plum and answering more of your questions, talking, getting more into detail on some of these strategies, and, of course, the new laws that are affecting just about everyone. So we will talk to you about this on the Social Security Show this afternoon and every Tuesday, 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern Time. Where do you go? WealthEd.com. It's only online, WealthEd.com. That's where you find it. Occasionally, you can also catch it rerun on Biz TV, but WealthEd.com if you want to watch it live. Social Security. 877-PLANNER. We got a couple of lines open still. 877-752-6637. Let's move along to Julie in Concord, California up next. Hi, Julie.
Oh, hi. Yes, my father is a retired postal worker. He's 88 years old, and he was told years ago he couldn't collect his Social Security he paid into.
Right.
And my mother died last year at 81, and he was told he couldn't collect hers. So I'm wondering, I'm one of six children, if any of his six children can collect my mother's or my father's Social Security after my dad dies, because they both paid into it.
No, not unless they're already receiving it. The only way for a child, an adult child, to be receiving a benefit from the parents is if the adult child had been disabled before they were 22 years of age. So it's not designed to continue generationally, disability need to continue that. So it would be very difficult for that to happen. They're not dependents of your father. Your father is retired. The reason your father is not eligible for a benefit from your mom or for himself is because he didn't pay into the Social Security system. He paid into the old government civil service retirement system, which did not pay into Social Security. And so he didn't pay into it and earn his own. And then there's an offset on any survivor benefits from somebody else's work record. It's called the government pension offset. So that's why he's not eligible for any Social Security. But unfortunately, there's also nothing available for children unless they are dependents and unless they were disabled prior to the age of 22.
And what's the reason he can't collect my mother's Social Security?
It's something called the government pension offset. So what they're going to do is they're going to take his pension from work where he did not pay into Social Security, the civil service retirement system, and they're going to use an offset to the Social Security that he would otherwise be eligible for as a widower.
Give an example here, if you would.
The pension offset is equal to two-thirds of your dad's pension. So let's just assume that your dad's pension is $3,000 a month. Two-thirds of $3,000 a month is $2,000 a month. So the first $2,000 a month that your dad would be eligible for from your mom's survivor benefit is wiped out because of this government pension offset. So unless the survivor benefit was greater than two-thirds, the widow's benefit from Social Security was greater than two-thirds of your dad's pension, he's not going to get any. Now, if his benefit was $1,500 from civil service, two-thirds of that is $1,000. If the widow's benefit was, say, $1,400 a month, the first $1,000 is wiped out, and he would end up getting a $400 a month widow's benefit from Social Security. My guess is that his pension is larger, or two-thirds of his pension is larger than what he would have received from your mom's work.
Yeah, after taxes, it's about $1,580.
They would look at before taxes. And so,
I don't know what it was before then.
Do you know what your mom was receiving from Social Security?
No, I don't.
So you can look at it.
Look up in her page.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at it and see even 1580 after tax is probably closer to 1700 or 1800. 1800, that means $1,200 would be the offset. If mom's benefit was nowhere near 1200, your dad's not going to get any widow's benefit. Two-thirds of dad's pension.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, Julie.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Julie. I mean, it's the law. It's the way they set it up. And the reason they set it up, Professor Plum, is because they didn't think anybody who was receiving a pension where they didn't, I'm talking about Congress here, they didn't think anybody who was receiving a pension from a job where they did not pay the same FICA taxes that other people who are collecting Social Security did, that they should be able to receive both the pension and Social Security.
Right. I mean, they're already receiving, in Congress's minds, you're already receiving a very nice pension. And Social Security is meant as a safety net for people who have pensions, for people who didn't have very much income. And you're obviously rich, and so you don't deserve it. I'm kind of being sarcastic, but
that's what they say.
I
don't ask, I mean, you know, whether we agree or not, I guess doesn't matter, does it?
You can kind of tell whether I agree or not by my statement.
Oh, I'd have gone even farther than that. But thank you for that. Okay, let's move along. James next in Fort Worth, Texas. Hello, James.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
Yeah, I've got a trust, and my wife died about 3.5 years ago, and I've got property in a trust, three pieces of land and three houses, and I've got three children, and I was wanting to know if the children could inherit those houses before I die without incurring a tax penalty.
Well, they can't inherit an asset before you die. Inheritance is something that happens after you die. Now, what are they going to do with, what's the total value of all these properties?
Well,
give or
take. I don't know. I've got 780 acres of land, 148 in Texas, and 640 in Arkansas. And
so how much ballpark? Are we talking, you know, $5 million, $10 million, you know, $100 million? What are we talking about?
Yeah, well, Texas land would be worth about $280,000, I guess.
$280,000. Okay, so we're well shy of the $5 million number.
Do what?
Your total net worth is well shy of the $5.5 million.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah.
Okay, from an inheritance standpoint, there is no a federal estate tax. From a gift standpoint, if you were just to give it to them, there's no gift tax either. You would just be using up your future inheritance, you know, exclusion right now.
So I can gift it to them.
You can gift it to them. Now, the difference is, what are they going to do with this property? Because if they turn around and sell it, whatever your basis is, if it's lower than the current value, will transfer across. Whatever gain is in that property will transfer to the kids. And when the kids sell it, they'll pay gain tax on whatever the gain is.
Yeah, I understand that, yeah. Yeah, but... Now, I understand that you can gift $14,000 a year.
Right.
But I didn't know I could gift the property.
Well, you're allowed to transfer currently up $5,450,000 at your death without any estate tax. But if we want to use that exemption up now, we can use it to offset the gift tax as well. So I could potentially, if I had $5,450,000, not only could I give the $14,000 per year to anybody that I want to, over and above that, cumulative $5,450,000 that I can give, and I cannot pay any taxes with it. Now, if I give my $5,450,000 today, I don't have that ability to give it at my death again. It's the same credit basically against taxes. But unless you're worth $5,450,000, you're not going to worry about a gift tax. You will have to file a return and say, hey, I gave away $800,000. I gave away this much money, and don't tax me on it. It's called it's a 709 tax form, but it's not a it's not an event where you have to pay the taxes.
Yeah.
The government pays the taxes.
Yeah, I can gift them.
Yes.
Then I wanted to give each one a house, and they're going to live in it, so they're not going to be selling it.
Okay. Well, as long as you don't exceed $5,450,000 of gifts, you're fine.
Okay, so I was wondering about that. I was afraid, of course, already died, so I thought, you know, surely I can give some of it.
Right. I mean, you can give $5,450,000. How long ago did your wife pass?
About 3.5 years ago.
Okay. My guess is you didn't file for her credit at that point, but you still have a $5,450,000 credit of your own.
Right.
And
right.
So, I mean, unless you win the lottery, you're not going to pay any estate taxes.
Well, that's good. I appreciate that. I wanted to know that.
Okay, James.
Thank you very much for the call, James. I appreciate it. Yeah, that's another area of
just
great
a confusion area,
isn't it? Because you hear about
$14,000 a year.
You hear, well, I can't give more than that, and you say, well, what if I inherit? I mean,
inheritance isn't gifting.
No, it is not. It is not. And actually, inheriting things, capital assets like homes, is a much better deal than actually gifting them over.
Right, but for James, he's giving some houses that, even though they have some gain in them, the kids are going to live in them. So the kids will live in them for 2 years. Let's say 10 years down the line, they decide to sell it. If the kids are married, they can exclude up to $500,000 of gain because they're selling a personal primary residence in the first place. And so it's
right.
Not a big deal. And we do have this. There's a $14,000 tax-free credit, tax-free gift. And then anything above that is a taxable gift, but the government pays the tax
on the first $5.45 million this year.
$5,450,000.
Right.
They pay the tax.
And if you're married, you can combine those two to 10.9 million.
Right.
Million, yes, 10.9 million. James, thank you for the call. We have a couple of lines open again. Brain Trust standing by, going through your phone calls. 877-PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. We're back right after this. Bucket Strategy Investing, Brain Trust on tap for you this hour, another hour just ahead in most cities around the country, so stay tuned for that. And if you just can't get enough of the Brain Trust, I'll tell you what, you can meet them in person. You can get all the advice that you want right there at the Lucia Capital Group 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops. I'll just remind you quickly, this Saturday, Seattle, Washington is next. Listening, watching in Seattle, join the Brain Trust there at the Hilton SeaTac, if I have that correct. In Seattle, February 27th, 9 o'clock in the morning. You sign up at wealthed.com, wealthed.com. After that, a couple of weeks later, March 12th, Saturday morning in Phoenix, Arizona, and then the following Saturday, March 19th, we'll find the Brain Trust in Portland, Oregon. Professor Plum, Terry Keyes, and the local advisors would love to see you there. You'll have a whole lot of fun and get your questions answered. Once again, wealthed.com, and find out where else the Brain Trust is going to be beyond March 19th. It goes well into April. All right. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Let's continue on the phones. Couple of lines open still. Duff is next up in Miami, Florida. Hi, Duff.
How you doing? My question is using a quit, Q-U-I-T, quit claim deed for my rental property. If I sign one of those documents today for several rental properties, and I die 10 years from now, but I signed those today, I understand that those documents are still good, and it would not require my children to go through probate court or all of the other stuff. Is there any truth to that?
That's a legal question, and I'm not an attorney, so I can't give you a legal opinion, but that's what I have heard as well. But what you're trying to just avoid probate on this?
Yes. Basically, what I'd like to do is continue to control the property without going
right.
through all of this trust, and et cetera, et cetera. Just go ahead and do quit claim deeds for my properties today, and then on my death, my heirs would present these, and then the title just transfers. Now, I do know that the county SA changed the title. We're going to reassess. I understand that, but that's kind of what my understanding is, but you may be right. I probably should get a legal advice on
that. I think it would be a lot better just to have a living trust, because what if I have – how many kids you have that you want to get these properties?
Three.
So there's three kids, and all the quit claim deeds are in your safety deposit box. And I am upset with my brothers and sisters by the way they cared for you towards the end of your life. And I get to the safety first, and I see that you're giving them some of these outright. I'm tearing those things up so that they go through the estate and I get bigger share.
Okay.
Get a trust.
Right. I understand. So the trust would be better.
Right. And then the other thing is what happens, you know, it's just cleaner, simpler, better. There is a step up in basis if they pass through the trust when you die, but it will avoid probate. It'll go to the kids, and you know, make one of them the trustee, and they're supposed to do, and the others will hold them accountable for it because they don't want to get shortchanged either by what you've set forth in the trust. And you can change it if you want to in the future, just like you could have changed the quit claims because nobody's ever seen them or recorded them, so you rip them up and redo them. Just do the trust.
Right. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you for the call, Duff. Yeah, it's a quit claim is what it's called.
Yeah.
And essentially, it's just saying, I give up the interest in this.
And there's no warranty in it. There's no guarantee that I even own the property in it. But it is a way to transfer property in a very... So you normally don't do it between unrelated parties or people who don't know for sure that you owned it to begin with. You would do warranty deeds and other things for there.
Oh, we've seen that too, by the way, where in some scamming
cons,
where people have done this over multiple, you know, this or multiple owners.
I can claim to be the owner of something and quit claim it to you for money, but and you can try to go, you know, record it. But if I didn't own it to begin with, you got nothing.
Exactly.
So now I don't, and I've heard this story before where people will say, I'm just going to quit claim it to my heirs. I'm going to put the quit claim deed in my safety deposit box. And then when I die, they'll record it at that point. And I just think it opens up problems, especially when there's more than one beneficiary. I'd just rather, it's not, trusts are not that cumbersome in most states. And just do a trust and have it done easily.
877-PLANNER is our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Now, I said we have another hour coming up, and we do. I want to get into a little bit more because we didn't really get as normally
very far at all.
Happens into the question of when to take Social Security. And a lot of people tuned in for that, and they were going to, you know, waiting with you know, a great anticipation as to when they should actually take Social Security. So I want to kind of continue this, whether it's good to take it at age 62 or full retirement age or age 70 or anywhere. A question that a lot of people have is, I just don't know when. I've heard you should always take it early. I've heard other people say you should always wait until age 70 because the number of checks are greater than that. We more next hour, but if you could, I hate Rule Plum, Professor Plum, but I mean, is longevity perhaps
longevity
the biggest determiner?
It's one of the main determiners. And so if you're a single individual and you're not looking to take a benefit from anybody else's work record, you're looking at your life expectancy. If you really believe you're going to live into your late 80s and beyond, you should probably defer taking your benefit, if possible, until age 70. If, on the other hand, you're like one of our callers yesterday who said, my life expectancy is not all that great. If I get to normal life expectancy, that'll be a good job. Take it as early as you can get it, and because it just doesn't have the time horizon to make up for missing out on those early benefits. It becomes a little more difficult when we have a married couple. And again, it's going to depend on whether or not the married couple is old enough to take advantage of any of these restricted or file and suspend strategies. But in general, if you want that general rule of thumb, you would end up, if one of you has longevity, you're going to defer, in general rule, it's not for everybody, you defer taking the higher benefit until age 70. And if the other one has average life expectancy. So basically, you're setting the larger benefit. You're determining whether to defer or take it early on the longest life expectancy.
For the higher earner should be determined on the longest life expectancy.
Whether it's yours or the spouse's life expectancy, or however long this benefit's going to last. And you set the lower benefit, you know, on the shorter life expectancy.
And the reason is?
Because the larger benefit will continue for as long as either one of them is alive. The larger benefit turns into the survivor benefit going forward. And so it's not just my life I have to look at if I'm the larger benefit in the two in the marriage. My wife will take over my benefit if I die too soon, and she'll continue the higher benefit. So my benefit continues, even though I might. Her benefit stops, even though she might continue longer than her benefit. Her benefit stops when I do.
Right.
My benefit stops when she does in that respect.
And if you allowed yours to grow and you didn't take yours, even if you died before age 70, she could still continue to take hers as long as she wants and defer taking the widow's benefit
until full
retirement age. Sure, which can make a lot of sense. Okay, we will talk more about this. Don't forget, if you want to talk to Professor Plum or any of the Brain Trust advisors from Lucia Capital Group off the air about any of the stuff that we talk about on this program, retirement, Social Security, or any products that you might have, their number is 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. Our number, 877-PLANNER, another hour of Bucket Strategy Investing coming up.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss. Objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associate with Lucia Securities LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.